Welcome back to Camp Half Pod. We are your head counselors. I'm Erin, daughter of Athena.
And I'm Manasa, daughter of Persephone. This week we're discussing chapters 19 through 24, The Tower of Nero. This was violent, dude.
Yeah. I forgot, like, what happened in this. I don't remember really any of the details of the series. I mostly just remember that Jason died. But these were, like, alarmingly violent.
And they've been progressively getting violent. Mm-hmm. And I understand Apollo is supposed to be, like, a god. He's seen a lot of stuff. He's done a lot of stuff, too.
Yeah.
But it just feels so wrong in a world of Percy Jackson where, mm-hmm. like, monsters disintegrate and they regenerate. And, yeah. like, Percy knocks out mortal guards. He never, like... Or to our knowledge, at least, never, like, actually kills people.
He definitely does, though.
He definitely does. Like, I mean, the amount of helicopters he's downed and stuff, like, they do not survive
the
that.
Yeah. He's set on fire, you know?
That's true. The children he's killed.
Yeah.
The fellow demigod. The boats he's blown up. Like, there's no survivors on those.
But yeah.
In our mind, he's like not. He's like, you know, the way that in children's TV shows, they don't say kill. They say, I'm going to destroy you.
Mm. I like that. I actually think we should, like, I don't think we should destroy people. But I think that that's kind of a more fun way to say it, you know? Like, instead if you're angry at someone and you're like, I'm going to kill you, saying I'm going to destroy you, way more threatening.
And it's also like, what does it mean? It's so vague. It could be, I can destroy you emotionally. It can destroy you physically.
I'll make you regret ever being born. That's a good one.
Yeah. That's a good one because it also encompasses a lot. Like, you can just, like, make someone's life really inconvenient and that makes them kind of regret being born. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or it can be really violent. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, what we're going to talk about this episode is we're going to enter the titular Tower of Nero to find out, like, nothing goes to plan as per usual. It's like, it's a plan to have nothing go to plan. And everything is awful and violent.
Yeah. I like your use of the word titular.
The titular role, the titular Tower of Nero.
Mm, that's a good one. All right, chapters 19 through 21. Chapter 19. Flow on, river, ouch. Take me, ouch. Away from, ouch. Blessed river, ouch. Again, Rick was really pulling for words. He's, like, almost done with this book, you know? He's almost done with the haikus. He's like...
I wonder if he decided, he, like, vowed to a thundering sky to never write a haiku again after this book was done.
I would believe it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can also imagine him being done and, like, celebrating, and then his editor is like, actually, we need to change a couple chapters.
Oh, probably.
And that's going to need a new haiku.
Yeah. And he's like, no! It's his villain arc.
Table.
Yeah. All right. So we left off in the last chapter with cows raining down onto the troglodyte caverns. Everything is chaos. Apollo almost immediately loses track of Will, Nico, and Rachel. But he still is with Meg and also Gerfred. They have a whole debate about how to pronounce that. And I'm not sure. But I think Gerfred just doesn't like Apollo. But Gerfred orders them to jump into the underground river to get away from the cows, since they can't swim as fast as the trogs and humans. So Meg and Apollo jump in after Gerfred and get banged up real good against some sharp rocks. They do make it to safety, but the cows can swim. Like, they're coming. They're just a little slow. So they have just a little bit of time before they catch up. And I will say I Googled cows swimming, and it was delightful.
Like, YouTube videos?
Well, I just looked on Google Images. It's very cute.
I can imagine.
I'm going to need to post
Because their little heads pop up, right?
Their heads pop up. And it does. They can swim. That is true. Just, like, not for a super long amount of time.
Yeah, that's a lot of leg power they're going to need to keep themselves afloat. To keep that I can't big imagine head they're up. Very buoyant. Yeah.
No. But, like, they're so cute. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. How do people eat these things? Not to be controversial, but they're so cute. They have feelings. Okay. Onwards. Losing it today. So they find themselves on a slick stone ledge surrounded by a thick rock wall and the water below. But luckily for them, troglodytes are very good at tunneling. That's like their whole thing. So within minutes, Gerfred tunnels through and clears out a path for them and then seals the entrance so the cows won't follow their tracks and will hopefully lose the scent for a bit. Gerfred leads them through a winding maze of tunnels until they reach a stairwell that leads upward, which Gerfred says will make them surface within 50 feet of Nero's tower. Meg and Apollo begin to climb to the, as the troglodytes refer to it, the crusty crust.
Yeah. I love when the way that we say, like, describing words that are accurate but not traditional to describe things, like telling people that my shoulder feels really crunchy when I'm trying to explain that my muscles are tight. I think it's just peak comedy. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, I'm so crusty when I cough. Like, it's I'm recovering from a cold kind of thing.
Yeah. Or when you use something that you're like, technically, that's not wrong.
Yeah. But. And it's like, it is how a child who doesn't know better would describe the action, but there are better describers, adjectives for this word.
No, describers was an example of that. That's true. Yeah. You're getting meta.
That's on purpose. Uh-huh. Everything I do is on purpose.
Actually, everything is just like planned exactly. Yes. Because I'm so smart.
I plan 30 steps in advance. Yeah.
My whole life is a bit, actually. Chapter 20. Have you had your lunch? This part is not good to read if you've just eaten. Well, I haven't. Dinner's after this, so... We're running on empty here. So Nero's tower is honestly really boring from the outside and most of the inside. It just looks like a big corporate towel. I did that last episode. I said towel instead of tower also. It looks like a big corporate what?
I think you were just psyching yourself up. You were like, don't say it. Don't say it.
No. Chiron. The towel of Nero.
What did I say for you? Chiron. Chiron.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So the corporate tower is all glass and steel. There are no interesting guards outside. Meg and Apollo just walk right in and up to the front desk where they tell a bored receptionist that they're there to surrender. They even have to like log into a logbook their names and that they're there and give over their IDs. It's all very corporate. The whole like how formal it is and how no one seems to be that thrilled about Apollo surrendering. No one really seems to care. It really weirds Apollo out. The man behind the desk directs them toward an elevator, and they ride up to the 9th floor where Nero awaits them. They eventually end up in the loft space / throne room that Apollo had seen in his nightmares, and this is apparently where Nero spends his whole decorating budget. There are floor-to-ceiling windows. There's a bunch of potted trees in the windows, which we later find out are the, like, potted enslaved dryads, because there's, like, a dryad who ushers them into the room and is kind of like, Apollo says that in her eyes, she's screaming, like, leave, go back. And so they're all enslaved by Nero. There's also Persian rugs and marble pillars, etc. The room is lined with people who are all carefully positioned, and Apollo notes that it looks like they've been waiting, like they've been like places, and like they're gonna break into a dance, which is pretty funny.
Lined up, so full of shit for being like, if they break into a full dance, I'm gonna kill myself. Like, that's so embarrassing.
That part was funny.
Apollo, because you constantly burst into song.
Exactly. I'm like, sir, take a look in the mirror. We've been saying this the whole time about you.
Yeah.
Lined up on Nero's left are the 11 children that he abuses. And then there are also a ton of guards, including both Gunther and Lou Gesselwas, Lou is now in two steel braces on both her legs and a neck brace from when Apollo just like pushed her off a building.
Threw her, actually. Lifted her and threw her.
Yeah, he tossed her into the air. Mm-hmm. Nero himself is lounging on a gaudy purple sofa in a traditional Roman toga. So he's going full. He's really in character now. And Lou is all like, "You see, I told you they would come." And Nero's like, "No, Lester wouldn't surrender unless it benefited him." And he, you know, you think he's going to be like, "I know why it benefits you." But no, he has to take like 2 pages to do a villain monologue.
Of course.
Which begins, of course, with him talking about his mother. It was like classic. Classic villain. He tells this tale of how his mother, he always hated his mother because she tried to control him. So he had her killed. And even though matricide was like one of the worst crimes for a Roman to commit, he was still worshipped afterwards because he was so beloved. And this time he says he wants to bring back those traditional Roman values and be worshipped like a father. He basically is like, "I want to be everyone's dad." He's like, "My dream job is daddy." It's just like, what? Then he turns and accuses. He finally gets to his point about why Lester wouldn't surrender and accuses Lou of helping Apollo and Meg. He's got it all figured out. He orders them to be seized. And then this is the disturbing part. He calls out his youngest child there, who's like a 6-year-old named Cassius. He orders him to confiscate Meg's rings, and then he orders him to use the rings to cut off Lou's hands. And he does that in front of everybody. It's very disturbing. And then Nero throws Lou and Apollo into a cell and is like, "Meg, we're going to begin your rehabilitation," which is also really creepy.
The fact that he asks the youngest one to do it too is so fucked up. He's like, "The 6-year-old will do it." And there's only a light hesitation from Cassius, and then he does it because he's probably the most mind-controlled because he's the littlest.
Yeah, and he like thinks that Nero is like a god. Like, he probably hasn't realized that Nero sucks yet.
Yeah. The older ones have more of like a, "I am Nero's clone," and the middle ones are going through their teenage phase of like, "Nero sucks, I hate him, but he inflicts a lot of pain on me, so we just kind of have to do what he says."
Yeah. Sad. But yeah, it's really disturbing that he does, that he makes the youngest child do it too. Because like, what if that kid had a bond with Lou? I don't know.
My jaw did drop when I was reading it though, because I was not expecting that. I was like, "Oh, okay, what's that going to happen?" And I didn't also expect it to happen on the page either. That was
like, yeah, it happened like within a sentence of like Nero being like, "Do this." And the kid looks a little bit scared and then he just does it. Like, you could easily miss that if you were skimming or something. It's so disturbing. And but then you'd be wondering, what is going on in the next chapter?
Screaming.
Why doesn't she have hands anymore? Yeah. Okay, chapter 21. Fear the comfy couch, fear the jailer's fruit platter, and shiny toilet. So Nero's cell is actually really nice and fancy. It's like one of those jail cells that the rich people get. When they commit tax fraud and get caught for once. Apollo tends to Lou's wounds with the medical supplies from his pack. And he's like finally using his medical skills instead of singing. And he even gets some godly power back. He, like, his hands ignite on fire and he uses that to cauterize Lou's wound and help her healing process. And he also, like, he's thinking about healing and he makes it heal, I guess, makes her heal faster. After working so hard to heal Lou's wounds and make sure she doesn't get infected, I mean, obviously he can't fix everything and she's still in a lot of pain.
He can't grow the hands back.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But he makes it so she won't get an infection and she'll heal faster, hopefully. He then slips into a sleep because he's so tired from using his godly power. And he finds himself in a dream on the Santa Monica beach with none other than Jason. Jason just appears. And I was like, oh, is Jason going to have a nice closure moment? And I guess he does, but he's mostly there to give Apollo a cryptic warning. Yeah, but Apollo first apologizes to Jason, who tells him that he made his own choice and is, I guess, at peace with it. He talks about how he was a hero and heroes know that there's always a risk of death, of getting hurt in any sacrifice, and he was willing to make it, which is kind of sad because I feel like he shouldn't have been willing to die for this.
16, like that isn't really... Well, I'm a hero. I'm basically an adult.
No, you're not.
No, you're not.
And Then Jason says he's there to give Apollo a warning to avoid Mithras's servant, the lion snake entwined, but he won't give Apollo any more information. He's like, you already know, and deep in your mind. And Apollo's like, I really don't. Please tell me how to beat this. But Jason doesn't tell him anything else. Just that there is a price to pay for bargaining with the guardian of the stars. Jason then dissolves, and Apollo wakes up to find Lou awake and on the couch. She's actually coping pretty well and is mostly just concerned about finding Meg and helping Meg. Then Gunther comes into the room with lunch for them, and it's like pretty good lunch, honestly, for being a jail lunch, and tells them to get their strength back so they don't die before the party.
This still has to be a party.
Of course. Nero's throwing. He had his invitation that he sent out.
That's the only time I honestly felt respect for Nero. Every other time, same. I'm like, eh.
When he sent an invitation being like, you're invited to my murder of all of you, that's fun.
That's fun. That is honestly Commodus Caligula energy.
It is. Like, Nero was really trying. I still do think that that invitation is probably really boring, not pretty. But
yeah.
I wanted to note Apollo at one point in the chaos with the cows. There's a child, and Apollo saves a crystal ball for the kid. And then before they depart with Gerfred, he gives it to Gerfred and is like, give this back to the child. So I feel like that is very important for the Trogs to see that he's not all bad and only cares about himself.
Yeah. And in the moment, till he notices that Gerfred's facial expression changes and his attitude towards Apollo and Meg also change, which is nice.
They love their crystal ball.
They do.
Please.
They also the love their corporate, which is interesting that they don't align more with Nero's values in the sense of that they also love corporate everything.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I guess they don't like anything on the crusty crust.
Nope.
Yeah. Instead of just calling land anything, I'm going to be like, oh, the crust. The
crusty crust. We're at the crust right now. The crust. Over yonder on the crust.
Yeah. I did find that the part where Nero is basically saying, he's like, I killed my mother, but everyone still worshipped me. I could do no wrong. I want to bring back Roman values so that I can be worshipped like that again, like a father. I was like, that is some intense gender commentary for a middle grade book written by a white man. I don't know if it was intentional, honestly, but he's basically saying like he was worshipped for violence, even though he broke the rules, because he was worshipped like a father. And I was like, that feels really dark right there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Rick, where are you going with this?
And almost like him, because he killed his mother, who's a woman, and in Roman times, women were just seen as like, you know, baby makers. Mm-hmm. He was able to be forgiven. And it's also the commentary of like, rich, powerful people can get away with anything.
Yeah. But like, it's so interesting that he compares that type of power that like rich, powerful men in particular have to the same type of power like a father has in a family unit, which is really interesting.
Interesting commentary, baby.
It feels yucky, but
it does.
I'm like, it definitely happens. So
I feel it's almost more introspective than some of the adult books that I have.
Yeah.
Read. Yeah.
I was kind of like shocked to see that logic in there, but I don't know how deep it's meant to be, because Apollo doesn't really reflect on it.
Be fair though, this entire series is very like father-son, father-child relationship. It's like how the father ruins the child almost.
Not you, Dad. My dad not listens you. To this.
Tom, we love you. Also my father was yelling about the Roomba downstairs. Roomba. You know what I mean? The Roomba. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, Apollo and Meg's relationship, I mean, it's kind of more brother-sister, but I feel like for both of them, it's healing the broken father-child relationship by having each other as, like, a mentor almost in certain ways.
Well, my argument was that them there a lot of Apollo's like jumping off moments of like his character development is when he goes back to the Jackson household and he sees Paul with his daughter, and he sees Sally with that family dynamic. Even when like the world is about to burn, he's like, the thing he's focused on is like that, oh God, what's her name? Eleanor? What's the baby's
Estelle.
Name? Estelle. Oops. He was like, when Estelle, he's like, Estelle has to grow up. He's like, I cannot live in a world where Estelle doesn't exist. And Estelle being adorable and being loved and being treated like a queen and having that relationship with Paul and Sally is so important to Apollo. It's like almost like they're the beacon of hope, like that could exist.
Yeah.
And they're such a like a parallel of his own relationship with Zeus.
Yeah, that's so, and that's why, like, that's so interesting too, that the books are kind of bookended by that with an interaction with Sally and Paul in the first book and in the last book. Or I think it was just Sally in the first book. Paul was at work.
Paul was at work, but the baby was, Estelle was there both times. And so,
no, she wasn't born yet. So I guess she wasn't there.
Born. That's true.
She was in the belly.
But it's like that idea of like, but Percy was there. Percy was interacting with Sally the first time they met. And then that's the second
interesting.
Time. And so you're seeing this household dynamic. And then Apollo's like, if there's something I'm going to fight for, it's the idea of this. But specifically for like the Jacksons, but he's like really protective of it. Because it's like evidence that that life can exist. Because neither him or Meg have experienced it. I'm sure that's how Annabeth felt too when she like met Sally for the first time.
Yeah.
I was like, this is an active parent. This is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do love how Sally kind of feels like a stand-in for any kind of parent, like a positive role model parent. And like she wasn't perfect. I mean, she was perfect. But like perfect. She, you know, she it's not like she was super rich. Or, like, she had Smelly Gabe in Percy's life for a while. Like, it wasn't like everything was, like, sunshine and rainbows, but she still is, like, the model of parenting and positive parenting in this series. And it's interesting that she is still that. Oh, I love Sally.
Me too.
And Paul. I love Paul.
And Paul, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's all she wrote.
Anyway. All right, I have chapters 22 through 24. Chapter 22. I will go to sleep to save everyone I love. Don't thank me, it's cool. So Apollo is both shocked and unsurprised that after all the trauma that they have endured, everything that they've just witnessed, Nero is still planning on burning New York City to the ground and have a party. Apollo is also unsurprised to find out that the prison that they are in actually has less security and security cameras than what Lou tells him the residential areas have. Nero, who's killed his mom, so obviously he doesn't trust family, is monitoring his abused children more than he is his own prisoners. But mostly Apollo is super worried about Meg. He's imagining that she's back in her room and Nero's talking to her. He can see it in his mind because he has been in this position of having an abusive parent, and he understands manipulation very well, so he knows how this conversation is probably going. He's imagining that Nero is going to have blamed everything that had just happened on the beast, somehow make Meg think that it's her own fault for causing the beast to come out, and then going to try to play nice. And Apollo's unsure if Meg, who's all alone and super vulnerable at this point, will be able to fight Nero off for a second time. She had to take, it took everything out of her to get away the first time, and to have to do that after witnessing Lou get her hands cut off. Also, Apollo, through his introspections, has become very uneasy about the similarities of the house of Nero versus his own Olympian family. He's like, the way that the interactions, that the fact that there are 12 children with Nero being the head, and the fact that they're all kind of broken, they all hate each other and are jealous of each other, of the attention that Nero gives each one of them, and they turn on each other and they manipulate each other. Apollo is kind of, he doesn't want to think too deeply about it, but he understands that he's being reflected his own life back at him, and he's disgusted at what he sees. But also, Apollo's trying to have some perspective. He's like, try not to descend into self-pity, because even though he's like having a hard time being emotionally confronted with his trauma, Lou doesn't have hands. So he's like, Yeah, okay, that's let's true. Put things into perspective. So Paulo and Lou eat their sad sandwiches and they talk about the Mithras. Lou has seen it once before when it was like installed years ago. And she said that its weird lion eyes and snake parts were super scary. She was like, not looking forward to having to confront it again. But they need more information. And if they're going to go ahead and try to defeat it and try to defeat Nero, they're going to have to move quickly. So Apollo and Lou kind of talk in code in case there are microphones attached to the security camera, the one singular security camera in the room. Mm-hmm. And they kind of agree that since they know that Camp might have gone ahead with the attack, that they should still go ahead with the plan. Because if the camp is going to attack, Camp Half-Blood is planning on attacking the tower, then maybe there's a chance that Rachel, Will, and Nico made it out alive and the plan is still going to happen. So they talk about a little bit about their past, and Apollo mentions that Jason had given him advice, and Lou's like, who the fuck is Jason? And thankfully, instead of bursting into song, Apollo kind of gives her a little bit of information and tells her that he saw him in a dream. Lou asks, why can't you control dreams? You were a god of prophecy. And so Apollo decides to try to sleep, see if his dreams can contact Meg, or at least see where she's at and maybe give them some more information. So Apollo falls asleep and he takes reign of his dreams. So chapter 23, dream chariot, go out of my way. I'm a god. Honk, honk, beep, beep, zoom.
Another good one.
Another great one. Wow. Thank you, Rick. Apollo has a wild time driving the chariot of dreams. He tumbles through floors, he goes through a vat of Greek fire, and through the tunnels of Manhattan. As he runs through his dreams, he sees in the shadow Python coming to harass him. Basically, in his dreams, Python uses this opportunity to do his villain monologue, but Apollo actually decides he doesn't have time for it. Meg is of utmost importance. So he turns to Python and says, I really don't have time for you today. And Python is stunned. He doesn't know what to do. It's so good. And so it shocks Python and he leaves them in the dust. Apollo's thrown into an extravagant is the word I'm trying to say. The R was out of reach. So Apollo is thrown into an extravagant bedroom where Meg is trashing it to the best of her ability. She doesn't have her swords, but she does have any other object. And so there's a maid staying in the corner just watching her kick and throw and break everything in sight. Nero walks into the room and sits on the bed and asking Meg to join him. Apollo wishes that Meg would just like go feral and attack Nero at this moment because Nero is undefended. But Apollo kind of puts it together that Nero is waiting for her to do that so then he could punish her and blame Meg. Be like, you attacked me. I was defending myself. Meg instead sits on the chair near Nero and listens as Nero makes it seem like everything that happened was Meg's fault. And because Meg disobeyed. Again, Lou getting her hands chopped off, Nero destroying New York. It's all because of Meg. He even says, like, you know, Cassius was a little bit too harsh on his punishment for Lou. Like, he shouldn't have done that. We should punish him. If you want me to punish Cassius, I can. And Meg's like, the kid didn't do anything. He was doing what you told him to do. Which Nero doesn't... Nero's like, that's not what I remember. It just completely gaslights the shit out of her. It's so creepy to read. So he's definitely a crazy person. And Nero's comforting a distraught Meg. He's like, you know, you have a home here. I can take care of you. Apollo is selfish. He's a narcissist. He's only going to think about himself. Lou doesn't have hands. So, you know, who's going to take care of you? I will. And Apollo is in real time watching Nero successfully worm himself back into Meg's mind. And because Apollo is so upset, he loses control of the dream and finds himself standing in front of a golden door. And standing in front of him is the fasces of Nero. It's a 5-foot-tall golden axe, and it's pulsing with power. In that moment, Apollo understands that when he and Meg destroyed the other fasces of Caligula and Commodus, the power of their fasces transferred all to Nero. So Nero is basically more unkillable than he was before. When Apollo looks down, he makes eye contact with a lion man standing under the fasces guarding it. He has wings like an angel, but a face of a lion and a body of a serpent. Just looking at him makes Apollo's brain kind of go crazy. And he sees Apollo regardless of the fact that Apollo is a literal dream, just like an astral projection at this point. He tells Apollo with his mind, because this is a super insane, powerful being.
Because lions can't talk.
That would be insane. That's like a horse being on the phone. Yeah.
Yeah, just ridiculous.
Ridiculous. So the creation, so this being is the creation of Mithras, who is an ancient Persian deity. And he's basically just super powerful and a secret even to the Olympians. Just looking at him like threatens to tear Apollo's mind apart. And Apollo understands, like, fundamentally this being is immortal and is impossible to defeat. He's an unkillable creature. And there's only one way to defeat him, and it's a mortality for immortality, an eye for an eye, and something Nero knew that Apollo would never surrender. Apollo wakes up gasping to Lou having taken their silverware from the dinner that they were served and inserting them into her stubs to make a little life fork knife hand weapons. She's taking this all in great stride. She's making really lots of jokes. Is. They both sit down and come up with a plan to escape and another plan to attack. Chapter 24. Fie upon Nero, who wants not my arrow's speech? I can relate, though. So, they enact Lou's plan. When Gunther comes back into the room, Lou taunts him with her weird hands, and she's like, you have to come and fight me. What, you don't think you can take on a woman with no hands and a really sad-looking god? And Gunther takes the challenge, and when he walks over to Apollo and Lou, he slips on some salve. Mm-hmm. He slips on some salve that Apollo has spread on the floor, and he falls and knocks out. And so there's this automatic bars that drop down up and down when Gunther walks towards them to give them food and walks away. And because Gunther's body is in the way, the door can't close properly, so it just kind of like throws him up and brings him back down.
How did he not just get, like, impaled by those?
I know. It's very lucky. Uh-huh. I think it's because this is a children's book, or else he would
just
simply
impaled. But they just cut off Lou's hands.
A child cut off Lou's hands, actually.
Okay, so it's okay.
It's okay. So this allows Lou and Apollo to grab Gunther's sword and escape. They run down the hall to a closet door, and inside they find all of their weapons, including the arrow of Dodona, which is very excited to see Apollo. Lou tells Apollo they have to split up. She says that she will go to the Phasis and face the Mithras monster, and Apollo has to go save Meg. Apollo's confused because he had explained to her that he has to give up immortality, and he's the one who has the immortality, which he was going to give up without hesitation for Meg's and, you know, all of his friends' safety. Lou tells him that she's seen too many gods die, and Apollo realizes Lou has some kind of immortality, seeing she's been alive for several centuries. And is relatively young for the entirety of it. Apollo cannot fathom letting her take his place, and he doesn't want to see Meg lose another person she loves. So he fights her on it, but Lou promises she won't let herself get killed. She actually has a plan, but she needs Apollo to go get Meg. She gives Apollo directions to find Meg, so Apollo runs down the halls with the arrow, urging him to move faster since it knows that Nero has sent the guards to go fetch Meg. Also because he wants to speak. Apollo takes out a mortal guard who tries to stop him, but he loses his sword in the process. Two Germani soldiers attack him, and Apollo is able to summon fire from his hand to stop them. Apollo's godly powers are really popping off this chapter.
Yeah, they're coming in clutch.
Apollo finds the door using the directions that Lou gave him, and he kicks it in, like ready to find Meg, only find out he's not good at direction, has ended up in the complete wrong place. He's actually in a control room with a bunch of mortal IT people and Germani people. The head Germanist tells them that they have their orders. They're supposed to start lighting the fires right now and also just kill Apollo.
Hmm. Nice.
All right. So my notes, I'm not sure. I don't know what it is. I feel like since the introduction of our friends, the troglodytes, Rick has really found his groove with the humor and the characterization of Apollo and Meg. This book in general has been really immediately just a lot of good dialogue, really funny moments, really heartfelt moments. I'm very impressed so far. I think especially from starting off with the first book to hear Hidden Oracle was rough, my dude. To get to hear is really nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So my predictions is I have a feeling that Loose Plant's not going to work. Paul's going to have to give up his immortality. And that's going to be his final, like, this is my character growth moment. It's like, I don't care about immortality anymore. I don't know if he's going to actually lose it. I haven't decided yet. I think I need a couple more chapters to make a final prediction. You
haven't decided. You're making the
decisions. I'm actually writing the book actively.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're from the past.
From the past. The one thing that I'm pretty sure about is that Meg is going to be the one that defeats Nero. It has to be cyclical. I feel like she's going to either, it's going to be directly her or indirectly by like giving a moving passionate speech to her siblings who hate her to like rise up against Nero, or even the dryads who have been stuck and imprisoned by Nero. Like, she's going to take the people he's hurt and use them against him. And I don't know. I hope that's the way, because I feel like that's the redemption. Like, the same way that, like, it was Luke who killed Kronos in the end. Mm-hmm. It just feels, rather than it's just, like, the same story of, like, you know, a hero defeating a monster, a hero defeating a monster and having it forever cyclical. Instead, it's, you know, the hero is the one who defeats the thing that's been trapping him the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, the way that Apollo said peace to Python is hilarious. That is, like, definitely the Python's whole thing is just like slithering in Apollo's mind, taunting him. I feel like the power of just being able to completely ignore Python because he's so much more invested in saving Meg is so powerful and also hilarious.
Yeah. To just be like, I literally don't care about what your evil plan was. Like, I'm busy.
Like, I don't have time for your taunts. Like, I have things to do.
Mm-hmm. So good. Python with his little legs are like, oh my gosh.
Just trying to keep up, just like slapping like a little lizard.
Yeah.
All right, ready for some lightning bolt questions?
Yes, I am. I thought this was a very funny question sent to us by Julia. Would you rather fight a vertical battle, like going up a tower, or a horizontal battle, like on a plane, on land, I guess?
I feel like stairs, in theory, it would be nice to have like a floor separation from my enemies when I need a break. But at the same time, stairs sound tiring. Like, if I'm being chased and I have to run 7 flights of stairs, I think by flight 6, I would just give up.
Yeah. I mean, there's really elevators, but someone could just like shut the power off.
Yeah. And it's like a very vulnerable place to be when you're in an elevator.
Yeah.
So I think horizontal battle, I guess. It just also feels very vulnerable. Distinction. Vertical or horizontal? Hot dog or hamburger style?
Hamburger style battle. Yeah, I feel like I lean towards horizontal just because if I'm in a tower, like, what if the tower falls, you know, and I'm high up or something? Like, what if there's like explosions? That gives me anxiety. I can't just like run. If I'm on a plane, I can just run away really far.
I am like, you are very vulnerable. Like, you can be seen the entire time, but yeah, no, at least there's distance.
I thought you were saying I specifically am vulnerable. That's like, you're not wrong.
I'm making plans as we speak.
Yeah, that's true. It depends if this horizontal battle has like, there like things I can hide behind?
Yeah.
If we're just talking like a plane field versus a plain nothing in it tower, I might lean towards the tower, because having nowhere to hide, I would just not even know where to go.
Yeah, at least you can keep going up until you can't go up anymore.
I like the idea of having like a battle on stairs. So over Anakin. This is what the step
master trained me for.
Like, I have the high ground.
You're like one step up.
I know, and it'd be like, I'm still taller than you. Okay. This question I came up with, if you could have a troglodyte build a tunnel for you, where would it lead to?
Okay. I have a bunch of like, especially after college, I have a lot of long distance friends and family. Mm-hmm. I would love a tunnel that would like let me just like go to their house.
Yeah. So is it like a magic tunnel then, or do you have to still walk like across the country?
Oh, I guess that's right. In my head, it was a magic tunnel.
I like that idea if it's a magic tunnel.
If it's not a magic tunnel, I would definitely want to have one parallel to like just like underneath the freeway so I could skip traffic.
Yeah.
Especially at rush hour, so I can always have like a lane to go that I know it's only going to take me the actual reasonable amount of time. And yeah. I don't have to wait for rush hour to be over.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if it's not magic, even like, because I'm like, a tunnel to work would be nice, but that's still like a good like 15 miles, and I don't think I could walk that daily. Yeah. So even like a tunnel from like the bus stop up the hill, so I don't have to, I mean, but then the tunnel would probably also have to go uphill.
Oh, I was really like driving stuck. My car through this tunnel. I didn't even think about it.
I was like, good. Okay, if I could drive through the tunnel 100% to work, then I would, my commute would be so much shorter, and it could like go where, you know, I wouldn't have to follow roads.
Yeah.
Maybe I could have a secret parking spot.
Yeah, that would be so nice. That'd and it would be so safe cool. all the time.
Yeah, no one would break into your car. I love that. Yeah, if it was magic, I'd love to go like visit people. Yeah. Use it to just go see friends.
Yeah. Just like, oh, then want to just go like see my relatives who live across the, you know, the ocean. That'd be really convenient for me. The pond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. What item in the way that Lou has attached diningware to her, her stubs, what item would be most convenient to have attached to your body?
Convenient? I mean, the diningware does feel convenient. I think having a pen would be kind of nice. For fun, swords. Just imagining swords as hands. But I don't think it would be convenient. I think it would actually make my life a lot harder overall.
I think it would be so funny. You're like, baby, come here.
Yeah, I think my first thought is like a pen, so I don't ever have to look for one.
Simple. That's a good one.
Or a water bottle.
Oh, water bottle will be nice.
I'm always like, damn it, my water bottle's in the other room. But that might be kind of heavy on my arm.
I wouldn't mind like a spoon, honestly. Okay. I feel like it's very convenient and it's not as threatening. I'm not gonna stab myself in the eye as easily.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would like be scared of you with spoon hands. I think they would just laugh.
But I do have like the metal advantage of having the spoon, I think.
Yeah, you could whack someone.
I could. I could scoop someone's eyeball out. Yeah.
Ooh. You would get the metal detectors, though, would hate you.
That is true.
Metal detectors hate her.
She has spoon for hands. I think it'd be really funny if you have, like, one's a sword on one hand and then something like soft on the other. So you're like, this is for my enemies and this is for my lover.
Like a pillow or something. Like a pillow. Like a comb. Oh, a comb would be kind of cute. That might be useful too because you could brush your hair whenever. But you could also whack people.
Hairdressers hate her.
Hairdressers hate her.
All right, well, next week we're going to be back with chapters 25 through 30. I think we are, according to my Kindle, 60% of the way through the book. So the Tower of Nero.
Yeah, we're at like they're in the tower. Into the climax.
The titular tower.
The titular tower. The towel. The towel. The towel. If you are interested in supporting us, you can find us on Patreon. The link's in the episode description. There's also a link to send us an audio message as well.
Our social media is at Camp Half Pod. Our email is camphalfpod@gmail.com. Message us on their email or even social media, and we will let you join the Discord. Come join us.
Yeah, super fun. Mm-hmm. And don't forget to rate and review wherever you are listening to us.
Bye-bye.